Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast of Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios on this Friday morning. Holy crap. You'll never guess who's here co-hosting with me. Josh Webb.
I have been resurrected from podcast retirement.
Did you forget the number? Were you able to remember the number?
I did. Well, you know, no. See, the way my flip phone works, I ran out of minutes, and then I couldn't call back. So I've been, just been running on, just doing whatever I can, No, man, we've been busy. We're moving. We've had another baby. I have not been hunting. What else? There was Christmas. There was a lot going on there. So I just took a little hiatus.
Well, before we jump off into that, coming up in just a minute is an interview with a continuation on the story with Spencer Halford. Spence jumps back into the story of Thunder Rolls, and he also talks about the video they released this week. Which does he like better, duck hunting or turkey hunting? You're going to find out in just a minute. All right, so let's talk about a new baby for a minute. What day, how much, what's his name? I know it's a boy.
Yeah, his name is Wilder. Yeah.
I got to sound like something on radio, though.
Yeah, his name is Wilder.
I like that name.
He was early, but both of our babies have been early. But he was fine and healthy. And matter of fact, we came home the next day. That's why I told you that. You called me. We were in the delivery room. And or afterwards, we were talking, and he said, "Okay, cool. We'll talk to you in a couple of days when we get home." I said, "No, they're discharging us tomorrow. We're going home." And you were just like, "No, there's no way."
Hold on.
They did.
Let's play that day out. I called you on the way to the doctor. You called me coming out of the doctor.
I did.
I called you and said,
"Yeah,
you're in the hospital." You said, "Man, this
because I told you
happen.
We were going to record." Yeah, we were going to record, and I said, "Well, look, we're supposed to run into baby doctor."
Right.
They were going to check on Katie again, my wife. They were going to check on her again and the baby and everything. And then, she came out of she came out of there, and the doctor looked at me and said, "Well, let's go have a baby." I said, "Okay, cool." So then I tried to call you back, and we played phone tag, and then you finally got me. You finally got me, and I was sitting on the couch in the delivery room, and what was funny about that?
Forever. You texted me like 30 minutes later and said, "Hey, he's here."
Yeah, well, that was the thing. We were talking on the phone, and we were laughing. Me and you were. We were laughing about, "Well, hey, look, I'm sitting on the couch in the delivery room. We're just, we're checked in the hospital. We're hanging out. It'd be funny if we record a podcast." So, and I can't remember what you were doing, but it was like, "All right, well, give me a few minutes." I don't know where you were.
I was going to the farm.
That's what it was. You said, "Let me leave the farm." I said, "That's fine. I mean, that's cool. We got time." And then I hung up with you, and it might have been 15 minutes, and they came back in to check on Katie, and it was go time, for lack of better words. And then, I laughed the whole time, because then about 30 minutes after that, I texted you and said, nah, I'm not going to record because now I'm, you know, changing diapers. And you were like, no, no, that's BS. And then I sent you a picture. You're like, holy crap. I said, yeah.
No, what was so funny about the second conversation, text me, somebody had taken a picture of you holding Wilder, and you text me, and I was like, well, at least you'll have a couple of days to record now because you'll be in a hospital for 2 days.
Yeah.
You're like, nope, going home tomorrow afternoon.
No, we were back home. My wife is Superwoman. It's just unbelievable. She did incredibly well with Waylon, our first child. And then this time, somehow or another, she got better. It was even easier. And Waylon was really easy. Wilder was even easier than that. But anyway, everything was fine and good. And no, I mean, we hadn't had the baby 10 minutes. And the doctor, you know, looked at Katie and told her and said, look, as long as everything's okay with the baby, we'll be able to, you know, y'all can check out and go home in 24 hours. And if that's okay with y'all, we were like, yeah, it's fine with us. That's cool. So, you know, they have, because they do so many tests and stuff on them, no matter if they're born early or not, they do all that. And they try to do it all in a 24-hour period. So anyway, the next day that it got to be that 24-hour period, and they came in, discharge papers and the whole thing, and she told me, she was like, go on and get the car ready and let us finish up what we're doing. I said, okay. So we were home. I mean, we were doctor to hospital, baby, and then back in the comfort of our home in, 27, 28 hours. It was pretty impressive. but anyway, so, and now we're just, he's sitting right here in the seat behind me. We're headed to town to get some lunch.
Listen, on all three of my kids, the thing that if there was a negative about having three kids was the what they had for men in the hospital. They provide no comfort.
Uh-uh.
And not that no. The man is deserving of any comfort, but give me something besides a wood rocking chair to sleep in. I'm going to get a hotel room,
I agree with that.
I love you, but I'll be back after a while.
I agree with that.
Roy
Ed
is sitting
to...
in the Doug's House studios with me. And
oh, no, look.
Me the stink eye.
I have to tread very lightly on this one now because Katie's sitting right next to me within arm's reach in the truck. So I can't get out of the way of her if I say too much. But you're exactly right. Give me something. I mean, I'll say this. I did have a couch to sleep on, you know, but...
That thing is not a couch. That's what they use.
No, it's not.
In North Korea.
I think you're right. You know,
I mean,
they use a little. Well, look
at those couches.
With our first child, that part of it was a whole lot worse because we were there for 2 nights. It's still pretty normal, you know, the 2-night deal. But we were there during a time when the nursing school program was going through their rotations on the baby floor. And so, you know, when you're in a hospital like that, somebody comes in and checks mama and baby every 2 or 3 hours. Well, on top of that happening, in between that 2 and 3 hour period, these nursing students were coming in and doing the stuff they had to do to pass nursing school. So I was, Katie would be the better one to tell the story of how really and truly pissed off I was by day two in a hospital after zero sleep. And I finally told the nursing student, like, look, y'all can just come to the door and check off whatever you want to check off, but don't come back in here because I really want to sleep. And they didn't. I mean, they didn't after that. And that second night we were there with Waylon, it was a little bit better. But this time around, oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, that's okay. You reminded me of that. I mean, you know, I went into full pitiful man mode when we were there with Waylon because there was this, I was sitting there, apparently I was rubbing my neck and looking like I was in pain, and this lovely black nurse gave me a massage to make me feel better. So Katie was like, oh my God, you're being a baby. I'm like, well, hey, look, I ain't got any sleep. But this time around was a lot better. This time around with Wilder, I mean, I don't even feel like we were there. So it was nice. It was very, very, very nice.
Without videos, I'm telling you, man, that whole, all three of them, those 6 days of my life were just blurs without video.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, but, you know, this time, go ahead.
Hey, you're headed out to Texas, and we'll get back together on Monday. Can't wait to hear about how that trip goes. You and Waylon are heading out there, right?
Yeah.
Brother-in-law,
me and my,
Joseph?
Yeah, me and Waylon and my brother-in-law. No, just me, Waylon, and my brother-in-law. We're cutting out here. Well, really not long after me and you get off the phone. We're striking out for Texas to go see some different scenery and shoot some Texas ducks and hogs and play around for a couple of days. So, but yeah, we'll have to talk about it. I'm excited about it. I've been trying to get out there for about 2 or 3 months, but you know how crazy everything's been around my house. So just hadn't been able to do it. And so we finally just pulled the trigger. So we're headed that way.
Have fun in Texas. I know that Waylon will have a ball.
Oh, yeah. He's looking forward to it. He literally walked around the house all night last night in the cowboy hat. So so he's going to be wearing his waders and a cowboy hat for the next 2 or 3 days. So there should be some good pictures come from this little trip. But yeah, we'll do it.
All right, brother. Well, we need to get to this interview with Spencer now. All right, guys. Like I told you at the beginning of the podcast, Spence, I'm glad you got phone service where you are. I was out there this summer, and I had zero. Spence is joining us from Nebraska. How are you?
I'm good. What do they say in Nebraska? Living the good life?
God. Hey, I know you travel a lot for turkeys. I mean, you travel everywhere to shoot turkeys. I think I saw you and your dad. Were y'all in Montana last year?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I don't think I've ever seen anything in my life like what Nebraska holds for turkeys.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them here, for sure. There's actually the guy we're hunting with texted me a video about an hour or two ago, and there's about 500 roosted like within 100 yards of the camp house. And I was like, man, you really shouldn't have sent me that video. It's gonna be hard for me to focus on a park goose when there's a goblin turkey in the backyard.
Let me ask you this before we jump in. I want to talk about the video for just a few minutes. I want to jump back into the story in just a minute. But from your eyes, how do you view turkey hunting versus duck hunting or waterfowling in general?
Man, they're very different. I mean, one's an extroverted sport, one's an introverted sport. I think waterfowl is just much more social and group oriented and all that. Turkeys are much more intimate, personal. And even though you may go with somebody, you may hunt with somebody, you know, it's just not as group oriented, you know, it's you and a bird or you and one person and a bird kind of thing. It's hard to compare them. I'm glad you don't have to pick.
I've always said waterfowling is my wife and turkey hunting is my hot girlfriend. If I believe in that.
That's funny. I would have probably said it exactly the opposite of that. Because, you know, waterfowling is a lot more popular and, you know,
to me, every day, listen, let's talk about Easterns for a second. And take the dumb birds out of it. When you're dealing with these Easterns that we deal with every day, it is a chess match. It is a chess match from hell trying to kill some of these birds.
Well, don't you think that's a lot more like your wife than it is your girlfriend?
No, because you know what I say about ducks. Ducks are going to do what ducks do every day. Unless, you know, you're in a certain moon cycle or certain weather pattern comes in. Where I hunt in Mississippi, you know, gadwalls are going to pour in by the thousands till about 7:15 in the morning. About, you can cook breakfast from on the nose from 7:15 till about 9 o'clock. Throw some sausage on the grill, and at 9 o'clock, you're going to have mallards, 2 to 4, come in, finish your limit out. Turkeys, those suckers, woo! It is literally, to me, it's Trivial Pursuit at its best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. They're so different that you just can't really adequately compare them, because the things that you're comparing are virtually opposite to one another, you know? And what you love about one at any given moment is like what you hate about the other, and then vice versa. You know, when you're tired of screwing around with ducks, it's like, you know, you're tired of the people, the crowd, and the drama, and the rigmarole that goes with it. It's like you just want to be by yourself in the woods for a little while. And then when you're kind of tired of being by yourself in the woods for a little while, you kind of want to, you know, be back with a big group of people, and, you know, so. I'm glad we don't have to choose.
In finishing my comparison, see, I could pattern my wife. If she was a wild animal, I'd get her every day. She is patterned out. She's kind of like, ducks are going to do what ducks are going to do.
Yeah.
Hey, and I know that you're kind of poetic in the way that you look at things. You don't just see what's right in front of you, because that's how your videos are. And to me, mm-hmm. the beautiful side, if I can use that word on this podcast, of turkey hunting, man, everything's coming back to life. The days are getting mm-hmm. longer. The smell of new life, blood coming into the earth, the
mm-hmm.
turned over dirt smell from farming,
yep.
in the springtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is the essence of hope, you know. It's the essence of you've survived something, and something new is ahead of you. I mean, there's no doubt about that. No doubt.
All right, so speaking of how you look at things, talk about this video for a minute.
You just made me think about turkeys more now for the next couple of weeks. Didn't need that.
Speaking of how you look at things, dude, that video was, I promise, it just keeps getting better and better every week. Even through the piss poor duck season we're suffering through, you still get a message out there.
Well, it's not that bad. It could be worse.
It could be.
But, you know, it's interesting. Everybody keeps talking about how bad it is. And then I was watching the Daybreak video that came out yesterday, I guess. And Eric was talking about Reinhardt as a good friend. And he was talking about how 17 and 18 was the best duck season of his life. Shot 11 everywhere he went. Man, I hunt about 40 miles from them, not far at all. 17 and 18 was the worst duck season of my life. I mean, this duck season isn't even remotely close to as bad as it was last year for me, at least. Maybe I just made all the wrong moves, or I don't know. But I think sometimes we get blinders on, and we start telling ourselves it's just bad duck season, just this, just that. We kind of lose sight of what, you know, it, it, that maybe it's not quite as bad as we think it is. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but
no, things should be a lot worse than complaining about duck hunting. I mean, there could be a lot more things going on that could be worse than not killing the limit every time you go. I think we've been spoiled. I just think that we've been spoiled. We have been. So many good ones in a row.
Yeah, we have been.
I told Bill yesterday when we were recording. Everybody in my family farms except me. And farmers are the world's worst about complaining.
Yeah, you're right. And being pessimistic. They never make enough yield, and they never get enough rain. You know, it's never dry enough, and then it's too dry. You're right. Shucks them a run for their money, though.
Don't get me wrong. It can get really bad in farm. It can get really bad. But, you know, when you pay for your house and pay for your vehicles and pay for all the farm, pay for the land that you just bought, and then you don't have but $150,000 left over versus $500,000 the year before. It's still a good year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, we would, this duck season right here, we'd think a lot different about if it was a 30-day season. If this duck season started on January the 1st, and, you know, the few ducks that we had through November and December had kind of built up, and we were back to the old days of 30-day seasons, we wouldn't be poor mouthing duck season. We'd all have a deer at the taxidermist, and, you know, we'd be raring to go, and we'd kill them good for 30 days. That's what needs to happen. I know that's not a very popular opinion, but this needs to be a shorter duck season. We don't need a 60-day duck season.
Well, we missed out, but the video that y'all released this week,
okay.
Rolling Thunder Game Calls, the video, like I said, the message that you talked about, that you spoke through that video, man, it was powerful.
Good. I'm really glad you enjoyed it. It resonated with everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it really resonated with the Duck South crowd.
Good.
I have found no better joy. Look, there comes a point in, I'm speaking for my own personal duck hunting career over the past 25 years. Got it for 20 of them now. But I got more joy out of seeing, not even a kid, but somebody drive from South Carolina that's never killed a duck or just killed a wood duck. And for them to hold that mallard for the first time, or
exactly
to be on a life mission to kill a pintail, and I've seen a guy start bawling in a pit blind after he killed a pintail, ran across the field on I've seen a lot of good dogs in my lifetime, but that was the best retrieve I've ever seen in my life. He winged a pintail, and I bet that he went on a 250, 300-yard blind retrieve and came back petting it like a fresh kitten, a brand-new kitten, crying. That's funny. What it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like you said in the video, if we really want to see this go on after we're long gone from here. We as urbanized as the United States is becoming more and more, we've got to get people involved in it.
Yeah, we do. You're right. It's true. Unfortunately, it's true. And
you know, it didn't really unpack it a ton in that episode, but one of the main reasons that we, you know, loaded up the truck and went to Kansas to do that was because the way so many of us hunt, at least in Arkansas, you know, you're hunting public and people stay in camp houses and stuff like that. You kind of have groups that you run with, like, you know, this is our group. It's not really a club, but it might be 8, 10, 12, 14 people, you know, depending on who all's there. And a lot of people do that. It's a whole subculture, you know, in Mississippi and Arkansas and West Tennessee of that public, you know, chasing them on public like that. And they do that because it's the resources there. It's better hunting most of the time than what people can afford in a club, right? Day in, day out. But the byproduct of that is that, you know, you get a group of guys, say there's 10 of you or 12 of you. And I think about the classic example for me is, for a little while, we had a house that we called Reno. And the Reno house had 6 bunk beds. So we had 12 people that could physically sleep there. But 6 of those beds were top bunks. And, you know, nobody wants to climb up on top bunk, even if you're, you know, a little bitty guy. Nobody wants to climb up on top bunk. But so for 12 people to be in that house, it was crowded. Right. And people sleeping everywhere. And then we actually had 2 guys that parked like a RV camper thing beside the house. So technically speaking, we had 14, you know, members, if you will, of camp. And like, there's pros and cons to that. One of the pros is that if you got 14 people, somebody's always hunting. And so there's always kind of a pulse on what's going on. That's a pro. A con is if you're the guy that's there hunting, you and one other guy or something, it's just one or two of y'all, and you shoot them good or you find the duck, then you kind of got to tell all the rest of your people in your camp. And you can't really, it makes it to where, you know, and our camp was no different than anybody else's. There's gobs of these all up and down through the flyway there. But what happens is then it just makes it so awkward to invite somebody new because everybody's looking at you like, you know, who's that guy? Why did you bring that guy? And you got to kind of justify yourself. You got to, you know, it's like if it's your brother-in-law, that's one thing, you know, or your cousin that, you know, in the military or something, that's one thing. But you just go bring some random Joe and everybody thinks, well, that, you know, we're going to be racing that guy tomorrow, you know? and so there's just kind of like this, there's kind of just this attitude that, you know, it's not just let's keep it a secret and not give somebody an honest report. There's like a, yeah, you know, new folks just are not really welcome to our sport, you know, and that's just not healthy. That's not good for any of us.
I don't think you could have put that any better. Explain that.
Well, so I guess where I was going with that in the beginning was the solution to that for us was we just decided we'll go somewhere, you know, we'll go a long way off, go hunt with an outfitter, you know, go for a couple days and you kind of and then it gives you a chance to experience something new people, new places, and you're not pissing off all your immediate buddies that are trying their best to keep what little bit they can squeeze out of, you know, what little bit of blood they can squeeze out of turnip, keeping it out of secret.
Well, when you talk about the group, and I know that you hunt with what, probably 8 or 10 a lot during the season.
Yeah, it just kind of depends on the day, you know. Weekends are usually more than that, but, you know, yeah.
And Criswell and I were talking about this last week, off the record. But, you know, that's a well-oiled machine, what y'all do. You know, you light 20 ducks in the decoys, there's not a couple of ducks getting out of there at the most.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows what their job is, and it is a group of freaking killers. You know, and I'll tell you somebody else
mm-hmm.
said this about you too, was Charles came over and hunted with you. Charles Johnson and I were talking about it. I said, it's something to see in the Charles. He said, dude, I'm always trying to get, I saved two shells for the ducks that are getting out of the hole. We lighted, I want to say it was 18 ducks, maybe. He said it wasn't a duck getting out. It wasn't a duck coming back out of that hole.
Yeah, that was, he's a character. He's my new buddy. We were actually on the phone a little while ago, and I was down there. I went to see him down there at his house yesterday morning. He got a kick out of that. He said, man, I'm not used to hunting with the other people that kind of know what they're doing. And,
you know,
it doesn't always happen like that, but
I will say this from a guy. Yeah, from a guy's perspective, when you hunt with people that don't hunt but once or twice a year, and you're sitting in the blind after the smoke clears per se, and you're thinking to yourself in silence, "Man, if my buddies would have been here. You know,
right,
10 ducks
exactly.
came in, maybe one would have got out.
Right,
you just
right.
saw eight get out."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt about it.
All right, well,
no
look,
doubt.
When we left the Thunder Roll story last week, or gosh, it's been 2 or 3 weeks ago now, because we've missed a couple of weeks because of holidays, but when we left it last week, and I was listening to it the other day, we left it at, you had a meeting to decide the name, and y'all had decided to go with Rolling Thunder Game Calls.
Yep. And, that would have been, September of 2010. And, we had moved back from St. Louis. We were actually living temporarily at my parents' house. Because we had sold our house when we moved to St. Louis to go to school. And since we moved back kind of so abruptly, we really didn't have a choice. And I was doing some odd jobs, some bookkeeping jobs, and accounting things for, I knew a guy that kind of did some consulting work for several different companies. And so I did some side work as a bookkeeper for him while we were kind of trying to heal up, and I started building a website and trying to figure out how we were going to build this thing into a company. And so Wes and I were fortunate enough at that time that, like, we didn't desperately need the call company to be our sole source of income, either one of us. In fact, we were, you know, I mean, I wasn't making any money at the time, but I mean, I was living at my parents' house there short term, and so kind of had all my basic needs met. And and Wes, you know, had his met as well, you know, in his regular job. And so it kind of gave us the unique opportunity to sit back and plan the thing out as best we could with some objectives have to this day sort of shaped the company and the culture of kind of what we do and who we are and the DNA and really the some of those founding things, those principles is not really the right word for it, but some of those kind of overarching hey, let's do it this way kind of things are some of the things that you see in they've manifested themselves kind of in the film series and things like that. But so there were a couple things that we were trying to achieve with this call. Okay. The first was we were trying to make
make a good thing in the old D2 better, more durable, easier to access, and cheaper, or more affordable. Those were the kind of the three primary negatives about buying an Olt off eBay and cutting it that we were trying to improve. We were trying to make it where there were more of them available to people, more affordable. There's no reason for you to, you know, spend $100+ on a call that you could drop and it would shatter like a China teacup. And we were trying to make them where if you dropped them, they wouldn't break, you know, more durable. And we decided that we set about that, and we did that. You know, we built this call, and we picked out the custom polycarbonate, and we had this idea. I had this idea that what if the material that we picked was you know, had some cool characteristics that I mentioned in one of the other episodes. But one of them was you could heat this material up to 512 degrees before it changed shape, before it melted. So it was incredibly heat tolerant, which was, you know, not, I mean, that's not like a huge benefit to a duck call. Your duck call doesn't have to be willing to stand up to heat, but if it's resistant to heat, it's also resistant to moisture and cold. And so it's not going to shrink and contract. And so, like, by and large, that just means it's a tough piece of material. But then the other thing that was cool about it was it had a really high tensile strength. It was very, very dense, and it was hard. And so we had this idea from kind of moment one that what if we, if the greatest fault of the old callers was how fragile they were, what if we could make one that was, you know, that we could prove was dense and hard and just more durable. So we had this idea that what if we took one of our very first ones and we blew it for a video, for a sound file, and then we put it on the ground and ran over it with a pickup truck. And we thought, man, if we could do that, this would just catch on. This would go gangbusters. And so that's what we did, was we built the first one and thought, okay, well, let's just try it out. And we drove over it with the truck tire, picked it up. It worked just fine. It had some scratches on it, but didn't crush the barrel, didn't crush the insert, and it blew just fine. And that kind of went viral. And we did that with the intention of just kind of like teasing everybody. Like, let's just kind of dangle this out there and see if there's interest. And so I had this kind of makeshift website put together that was not very user friendly and didn't work real well, and it kind of caught on so quick that people found the website like within a day or two of putting this video out there. And I don't even remember where we put the video, because at the time, like, Facebook didn't operate like it does now. There was
not video friendly at all.
Not at all. And you didn't, I mean, just there were no group pages, there were no call pages, you know, none of the community kind of pages that exist now existed then. So I don't know. I guess we put it on YouTube and we posted that link in like the refuge forums or, you know, stuff like that. And it just kind of, I mean, it caught on like wildfire. And that would have been like late September of 2010. And we weren't really quite ready to kind of start selling them, but it kind of hurled us forward. And there was enough interest in it that a couple of like stores called us. And we're interested, which was great, because one of the things I led out with here was that we kind of had some guiding principles of how we wanted to build our business. And one of them was, I'm not sure this one was right, okay, but at the time, we decided that we wanted to build our business around the model
that was dealer friendly. So we wanted to create a product that had a low enough raw material cost and manufacturing cost that would allow us to sell it to a big box store. We wanted to sell to Walmart and every other sporting goods in America. We wanted to do what the Olds did. We wanted to make the D2, you know, keyhole Olt available worldwide. And so that was one of the main reasons that we pursued the injection mold, was because an injection mold just gives you such a low per part cost. Typically it's got a real high setup cost, you know, getting the mold made is what's expensive, not the per part. But that allows you to then sell your product at a reasonable margin to a dealer, and then that dealer to mark it up, and then everybody makes money. Three steps of the game, right? The manufacturing company, then the call company, and then the dealer. And so what we had been kind of building for a year was with that thought in mind, that we're going to try to sell these to stores, to dealers. And along with that, one of the things that we were not going to push real aggressively was we weren't going to like make a big fancy website, bells and whistles, because we didn't want to undermine our dealers. But when this video kind of went viral, people found the little makeshift website that we had and started buying the dang calls. And we just weren't ready for that. But it took off. And so like literally a week or a week and a half, just a few days, it wasn't long after that video came out, I got a phone call from a guy who said, he saw the video, thought they were awesome, wanted a call. And he said, I want to be on your pro staff. He said, I know you don't really like have a pro staff or whatever that means, but he said, you know, I want to help with this somehow. And I said, okay, I don't really know what that means either. Cause mind you, at this point, I've never had a job in the industry. I don't know anything about the industry and what a pro staff is. I'd never been on anybody's pro staff or anything even remotely like that. So I just kind of went with the conversation, said okay, and listened to the guy. And he said, if you'll send me this call, he said, my college roommate was the buyer at Max Prairie Wings.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh man, cool. Okay. And he said, do you want me to try to get a conversation with him? And I said, man, that'd be awesome. I said, I'd love to give him some calls. And he said, okay. And so I shipped him a call like the next day. I went down to the barn, you know, made him a couple, three or four of them. And at the time, one of the first things that we did was I didn't have any idea how to tune a duck call for somebody. Like, I knew what I liked it to sound like, but I was kind of deep down in my heart, I'm a people pleaser. And so I wanted somebody like that to really like my duck call. So I would send them one barrel with three or four inserts. And I would put a colored piece of electric tape around the inserts, like a red one, a green one, blue one, orange one. And I would write down notes about what was different about them. Like the red one was this, the blue one was this, the yellow one was this. And that way, then when they got it, I would tell them, like, just call me and tell me which one you like. Tell me what you like about it. Blow it for me. Let me listen to it over the telephone. And so in the first 4 or 5 months that we were kind of in business, I learned a lot about how to tune a duck call for somebody to fit them by sending them multiple ones. Well, so I sent this guy, you know, a barrel and a bunch of inserts, just desperately wanting to get Max Prairie Wings business, right? And he loved the call, called me straightway when he got it, said, you know, I can get so-and-so on the telephone. I said, okay, let's do it, you know, got him on the telephone. And got him on the telephone, and so within 2 weeks of this video going out there, like we sold some calls to Max, and man, we thought we were world beaters. You know, we thought we got this thing licked. It'll be Sam Walton's nephew that'll be calling us next, and you know, we got to figure out how to get a Chinese guy that's a graduate assistant at the Christian Brothers to make, you know, 100,000 of these things instead of 50 of them, you know, a month.
You duck call man?
Yeah, right. You duck call man. Well, and so I had this, a funny thing that happened is, so I get on this phone call with Max, and you've never felt, you know, small until you got one little bitty thing to sell to somebody that has a bazillion things, right? Like Max has a catalog.
Everything. Right. Everything
under the sun. And so you get this guy on the telephone, and if you're any kind of a businessman, you're thinking, gosh, I got this guy on the telephone. If I had 100 products to sell, I could sell 100 times more than if I had one product to sell. And so right before the phone call, I told Wes, I was like, we got to come up with another product to sell. We can't just sell one model duck call. Like, that's boring. Why would anybody want to buy just that? And Wes said, man, just sell him some barrels. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, you know how all these guys are like breaking their old barrels? They stick the insert in there too far and it splits the barrel and they can't, you know, and then it leaks air and all that. I said, dude, tell the guy that you want to sell him a case of old replacement barrels. And I was like, Wes, that's brilliant. And so I got on the telephone like a few minutes later, and the guy said, okay, well, you know, tell us what you got. What are you making, and what are you this? And I said, well, we're making a molded, injection molded call. It's custom polycarbonate. It's very durable. You can drive over it with a pickup truck. I hope you've seen in our video. It sounds really good, you know, and I kind of told him all about it. And he said, well, what's it take to be a dealer? And I said, well, you know, to be a dealer, you have to buy a case of them. And at this point in time, I don't even have packaging for these calls. Okay. They're literally like, I'm sitting in my parents' living room and they're in a shoebox like that we had carried them from Christian Brothers in. And he said, all right. Okay, great. Well, I'll take a case. He said, how many is a case? I thought for a minute. And I said, 12. And he said, okay, great. Sounds good. We'll take them. When can you get them to us? And I said, well, you know, real soon. And I said, but let me tell you, I said, one of the other stipulations to being a dealer is that you have to also take a case of replacement barrels. And he said, replacement what? And I said, replacement barrels. I said, y'all got a lot of customers that blow Olds and that's one of the reasons that these calls are going to be popular is because they're more durable than that Bakelite hard rubber stuff. And I said, see, you really need to take 12 of these barrels because that's what people are going to want. They'll be glad to buy our calls, but I said, your customers are going to come in there and they're going to want something to replace their barrel with. And he said, you want me to buy 12 barrels that don't have inserts in them? And I said, yes, sir. And I said, if you don't sell them, I'll take them back. And he said, okay, that's fine. I'll take them. And so I sold a case of barrels and a case of BSODs. And the next day, literally the next day.
Hold on. I'm sorry I'm laughing through this because I'm picturing you sitting on a couch. He has to buy a case, looking down at a shoebox full of just calls.
Right. Correct. We had all kinds of problems at this point. Like the inserts didn't fit in the barrels very well, and I mean I didn't know where to get cork. I didn't know where to get reeds. Again, we had no packaging, like zero packaging. We had all kinds of hurdles to cross, but I'll wrap it up here for now. But the very next morning, I called another one of my friends and one of the guys that was actually at the when we went to dinner there at Mortimer's, and Wes and I told our buddies what we were going to do. One of my buddies that was there said, my dad's fraternity brother owns that store up there in Blytheville called Hawks. And if you remember, Hawks was kind of the original catalog, you know, mail. They kind of did the catalog thing before Max. Max was a bigger store, but Hawks had a huge circulation of catalogs that they sent out. And I said, man, that'd be cool. And so he said, well, when you get your stuff lined out, you know, let me know and I'll get my dad to call up there to Mr. Hawks. And so the next morning after I sold, you know, two cases to Max, I called Big Charles and I said, hey, you know, okay, it's time. Tell your dad, call Mr. Hawks and tell him I want to come there and see him. And so he called him and Mr. Hawks called me straightway after that. And we did the same thing. And what I learned from the conversation was he said the exact same phrase that the Max buyer said, what's it take to become a dealer? And a light bulb went off because now this is the second conversation that they're going to ask me. If they come to me and they ask me to be a dealer, then I get to play all the cards. They want to be, that, you know what I mean? I got them where I want them.
Yeah.
And so exactly. I told him the same thing. I said, you got to buy a case of, both of our products. And he said, okay, what's a case? And I said, a case is 12. And he said, okay, so 12 duck calls, 12 of the barrels. And he said, you sure these barrels are going to sell? And I said, yeah, if they don't, I'll take them back. But I said, I'm telling you, when this thing catches on and people start blowing this cut down thing, they're going to want these barrels. They're gonna realize these barrels are made better than those hard plastic Bakelite old barrels. And he said, okay, that's fine, send them on. And so we had our first two dealer accounts just like that.
Fitz, in no way was I laughing at you, but
no, struggles it's hilarious.
Into, oh man, it is the struggles to success. A lot of people don't kick there's a door in life in front of them. The successful people kick the door wide open and run through it. Other people just look and, oh man, there's no doorknob on this door. And mm-hmm. they sit there and look at it and walk away. Well, I can't open that door. I'm out of here. In the most successful people like yourself, which I'm very appreciative of all that you've done in the waterfowling world, you kick the door open, run through it. You know what? It's 14 in a case.
Yeah, right. And that's exactly right. Exactly right. Well,
whatever.
So I'll tell you, speaking of that, I'll tell you one more funny story about these dealers because that is my first two dealers. My third dealer was in Jonesboro. And after we knocked out two dealers like that, I had a little bit of a big head, you know. Still didn't have any packaging, still didn't have any of that. Which that's a hilarious story in and of itself. Because in order to give those calls to Max and Hawks, we went and bought a big, long, clear plastic tube. It was like a 1-inch inside diameter tube. And bought these little things that you glued in them to make them. Basically, they looked like they're about an 8-inch long clear plastic tube with a clear bottom and then a little black plug on the top. And the plug on the top had a hole in it, so they hung on the shelf that way. And we just improvised that from, you know, crap we could buy at Michael's or one of the craft stores. Well, so after I got those two accounts, you know, I was pretty proud of myself that I had, you know, we didn't have a website. Nobody really even knew who we were, but we took that video and parlayed it into, as far as I was concerned, that was the two best sporting goods stores in Arkansas. And so, I started thinking about what other sporting goods stores are there. And the only other good one that I could think of was D&W in Jonesboro. And I hope that Mr. Knoll, Dennis Knoll is the owner of that store. I hope he doesn't listen to this phone call, but I really wanted to sell. That was kind of my first short-term goal was I wanted Max and Hawks and D&W. And so we, a couple of us got back together and we started kind of plotting how we were going to, how could I get these calls in the store? And the same guy, Big Charles, that connected me with Hawks, he said, well, Spence, that's easy. So what do you mean? He said, I'll just call up there to the store and ask them. And he said, I'll ask for the manager and ask him for the duck call. And I said, that won't work. He said, oh, yeah, it will. I said, I can do that. I'm in sales. And I said, okay. So he called up there. I wanted to know if he just said, he said, man, everybody that I talk to is telling me about these duck callers called the BSOD or something along those lines. Have y'all ever heard of that? And they said, no. And he said, you mean to tell me that y'all are like the premier store in Northeast Arkansas and y'all have not heard of these new duck callers that are hot? And he said, man, they can't keep them in stock at Max and at Hawks. And he said, I was hoping that y'all would have some of them. And the guy said, well, I don't know if we do or not. I never heard of him. He said, well, let me talk to the manager. And he hollered back there. And the manager's name is Graham Eldridge. And Graham wasn't available. And so somehow, just stroke of luck, the owner of the store, Mr. Dennis Knoll, picked up the telephone. And the guy behind the gun counter who had taken the phone call just said, you need to talk to this guy. Apparently, there's a hot duck call out there. And the owner picks up the telephone call. And you got to understand, Dennis Knoll is very busy. He owns that truck store next door, and he's got all kinds of stuff. I mean, he's quite the businessman. How and why he picked up the telephone to take this call is just pure, proof that there's a divine creator up there and that he does care about me. Well, Mr. Dennis picked up the telephone, and Big Charles said, yes, sir. I'm looking for this new duck call. It's called the BSOD. And apparently, it's the hot thing. And Max Prairie Wings and Hawks carries it. And I guess they just don't have any of them in stock. They've sold them all. And I just was wondering if y'all had some because I really, really want one. I'll come get one today if y'all got it. And the guy said, well, I'm sure we can. He said, I'm sure we can order it. We can order anything from anybody, anytime. And Charles said, okay, well, I'll tell you what, take down my telephone number, and if you'll order them for me, I'll buy three of them. And so he took down his telephone number, and he asked Charles, he said, do you know who the manufacturer of those things are? He said, as a matter of fact, I do. It's Rolling Thunder Game Calls. And he said, here's their telephone number. They don't even have a website, but maybe you could order it from them. They won't. They don't sell them direct to the public like that. He said, okay, thank you. Gives him my cell phone number. I'm sitting right there beside him. He hangs up the telephone, calls my cell phone, and he says, yeah, Mr. Halford, my name is Dennis Knoll. I'm the owner of D&W Sporting Goods in Jonesboro, and I got a customer here that wants three of your duck calls, and I was wondering, what does it take for me to become a dealer of your duck callers?
Holy
I swear
crap.
On my life, that's a true story.
That is so awesome.
And I sold him, did the same thing, gave him a case and a case of barrels. And we went, this would have been like, middle of early October. And we ended up kind of, Mr. Dennis invited us to, I delivered those calls. Big Charles went and bought them. I gave him the money. He went and bought them. And that worked so well that sent Big Charles to sent somebody else back up there, bought a couple more calls, before long got a second order, Well, that part, that all just kind of steamrolled into, we actually sat at their table at the Ducks Unlimited banquet, their opening weekend of duck season in Jonesboro. I guess the rest is kind of history.
inside the story.
That's how I learned how to sell to a dealer. I know we need to check up here, but I'll just say that, things, there is definitely a higher power and the good Lord does take care of us.
the guy who bought, the very first guy who bought the calls at Max ended up, he's worked for two other places now and, has just, I don't even know how to quantify and express what he has done for my business by just believing in what we were doing at Rolling Thunder. And it's just crazy when you look back and think about how a little thing like that, you know, somebody picked up the telephone and called.
Yeah, I see videos of you there now, blowing calls. I've seen a couple of videos of you. I've seen a couple of promotional videos with you at Max, like at the call counter, blowing calls, talking about your calls. You know, promotional videos.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing
from where it's come from to where, what I'm saying is to where it is today. Here you are standing at the counter doing promotional videos for them.
Right. And all I'm trying to say is that, that's the good Lord has just blessed us. And you just take the next opportunity that's in front of you and try to make the best of it. And
you kick the door down almost, just like Spencer did. You kick it down and run through it. That's the only way that you're going to be successful. You got to learn from mistakes quickly, but you kick the door and run through it, just like Spencer did. You learn anything from this.
Yeah, somebody, I did hear a preacher one time say that, you know, sometimes we sit around and wait for the good Lord to open a window for us to crawl through it. And he said, sometimes that's what we're definitely supposed to do, sit there and wait for the window to open it, or for the next door to be open. But he said, sometimes I think the good Lord wants us to just grab a hold of the door and rip it off the hinges and walk on through.
That's exactly right. Well, these are the episodes that I appreciate, man. It's something you take away from these podcast episodes, because there's the next guy that's out there right now, maybe 20 years old, listening to this. He's going to come up with the next big thing for waterfowling, and he's going to take the wisdom from this podcast. He's going to kick the door open. So, well, man, just, I appreciate it, Spencer. I really do. I mean, you're a busy guy. You're in Nebraska. Listen, I just want everybody to understand, he's getting ready to go hunting in the morning. He was, it's my fault because I've been so busy at the farm that Spencer was gracious enough to say, yeah, we can knock it out tonight. I appreciate that, bud. I really do.
It's no problem, man. No problem at all. Glad to do it.
And I really, really enjoyed tonight. Great episode. It's one of those, I'm telling you, but look, everybody wants to know what we say when we turn the thing off. A lot of times, I'll hang up, I'll turn it off, and I'll say, man, this is going to be a good one. It's going to have great numbers. This one, I'll say it with it all. This is going to be a good one.
Oh, good. Good deal.
This is going to be a good one. Spencer, thank you again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line Podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.